Hello and welcome back to the Horror of the Emerald Valley debrief. We're going to talk about this. It was a lot of fun. And Rob, I think you got some questions for us.
Yeah.
What do you got for us?
All right, so let's just kick it off. What did you guys think of this?
It was great.
It was amazing.
Very fun.
I concur.
It was really good.
So much fun. And I loved the story that you told.
Yeah, the story was really good.
Yes.
The places you brought us and set up for us was fun. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything felt really fleshed out. Oh, God.
Ew.
Did you really do that on accident?
Yes.
Did you just do that on accident?
I did.
Oh, my gosh.
Ew.
Wow.
I'm so sorry.
Boo.
Wow.
Oh, that was too perfect. Oh, that was amazing.
Oh,
oh
God, that was horrible.
Horrible.
Okay.
So maybe we'll get to that a little bit.
But you know what I was trying to say.
You never have to apologize for a good pun.
It wasn't a good pun.
It was an amazing pun.
God. So maybe we'll dig into that and go to each person. Like, Andrew, what was your favorite part of this?
Yeah, so my favorite part of the whole thing... Oh, that's tough. There's a lot of really good scenes and just
what are your highlights?
Things we were doing. I think my highlights, I think it was especially like once we got to the care and were investigating and trying to see what was going on and started to really figure out things, like that was really cool. I think my personal highlights actually was unexpectedly the final battle. And, like, getting to, A, have the last blow, and then, B, be the one to, like, actually kind of, like, use my weaponsmithing to, like, you know, try and set up a way to try and break this thing. So that was fun.
That's cool. And, Hannah, what was your favorite part or your highlights?
Oh, it really is a hard choice because there's so many things that I love, especially, like, our character dynamics were so good. Mm. Like... they just gelled so well together and we had so many fun moments. I think besides ones that like Andrew's already mentioned, I liked when we were on the deck of the ship and the, oh gosh, now I can't remember what they're called. The stingray creatures,
yep.
were dropping the marbles onto the deck and like things were starting to happen. It was just really intense and I liked that a lot. That was definitely a main highlight.
Nice. And Susanna, what was your favorite part or your highlights?
Gosh, that is a difficult question. I really enjoyed like uncovering the story as we went along. You know, like the confusion and trying to figure out what's going on, running into the troubadour, kind of learning a little bit, you know, Jet being taken and us being like suspicious about it, you know, like I just liked figuring stuff out as we went along. It was really interesting.
Nice. And Wesley, what was your favorite part?
Well, that's the single, to pick up one favorite is difficult, like everyone has said, but just for the atmospheric coolness factor, I really loved when my character goes to the captain and is like, hey, can we have a duel on the ship in the sky?
That was really fun.
The duel was great. The initial fight with the, not the end fight, but the initial fight with the cadaver man and the worm thing.
Oh, yeah.
That ended up being cool. And of course, you know, pretty much any occasion where my character got to verbally bash on another character who existed only to be verbally bashed on by my character.
Yeah.
I was about to say, I probably need to say that a very close number two for like best thing for me, like was just Jen Scaprilli in general was so well done.
Yeah, I love
like,
Jen.
His name is perfect. His attitude is perfect. He was so much fun to hate. Like it was just great. All the interactions with him were fun. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And then of course the initial. The initial meeting between all characters in the bar there, that was good. I like that. That was really good.
Yep.
I really enjoyed that as well. Just seeing how the characters interacted and how everything progressed. it's hard for me to pick out any kind of favorites because, like, as GM, there's always highlights of every session, things that I didn't expect to happen, things that I expected would happen, didn't happen, that kind of thing. So it's kind of fun to see those.
Well, there's a whole section of the questions there for you.
Oh, there is. There is. So why don't we'll go in reverse here. We'll start with Wesley. Where do you think things are going from here? Wesley?
Well, I know that we're not probably going to, we might not see these characters again, but just using my character as an example, I think that the I could easily see him reacquainting himself, obviously, with this friend of his that he didn't know or had forgotten, and then I could very easily see Andrew's character and mine and this and Scarlath the troll. I could easily see just those three or all of them going straight to the Throlic Commission and being like, "Do you want to explain what was going on, please? Because you left out a few key pieces." but I could easily see this group staying together or splitting up and going their separate ways. But whatever the case, I'm pretty sure Thravek and Saliak are going to remain best weapon buddies forever. Mm-hmm. Because
I think so.
This is like the only game we've played where your characters are not friends, like active enemies.
Yeah, they're not enemies.
Or
yet.
Like even, I guess not in the last one we played, but like most of the time they don't get along.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah, the one-shots don't, historically, because like Lucian and Andrew's character weren't, and then Westweird for sure. Westweird was probably
Westweird
the most
for sure.
The most extreme opposite.
They literally almost killed each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. I think one thing where things are kind of going from here for at least one thing I didn't get to do, and that's kind of a little reveal of a question later, but just for time and flow of story and things like that, I think it would have been really funny if Gent Scapperly kind of, dusted himself off at the end there and said, "Well, you're clearly a very good sword master. Will you be my student?"
Oh, that would have been great.
Because he is a circle higher than you, and he could train you into the fifth circle.
I know it's not in story, but I will tell you right now that if he had said something like that, he wouldn't have even used his sword. He would have punched him. He would have punched him in the face.
How's your butt feel?
Yeah.
Gent.
Yeah. You were on it a lot whenever you came at me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He would punch him across the mouth. No.
Susanna, where do you think things are going from here?
Well, in the immediate short term, I'm going with Quinamea and we're gonna kick Jax's ass.
Yeah, we are.
I'm
going to set her pants on fire for having lied to me.
Yes.
And then I think maybe she might like hang out with Quinamea a little bit longer.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
I think she thinks she's kind of cool and she's a good way to move on to the next thing, whatever she's going to end up doing. She's like, "Hey, you want to give me a ride somewhere?"
Yeah.
Nice. And Hannah, where do you think things are going?
Well, after, we do that, because we are going to do that. I think maybe her crew needs a little bit of a break, so they'll find, like, a nice, more like a vacation-y spot to go to that maybe has
beach day.
Somewhere nearby for them to plunder, but where they can mostly relax.
Maybe plunder is relaxing. They're like, "Hey, you wanna chill out? Let's plunder."
Yeah,
are there like sky beaches?
There would be beaches. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, are there like sky
Mediterranean
beaches?
Area?
Like beaches sky in the beaches. Sky?
Ooh,
maybe.
Like
I don't know,
floating
there's
islands
ships that
or
are
something.
In the sky. I feel like there's a possibility. Yep. You know,
there's always a possibility.
That'd be cool.
And Andrew, where do you think things are going
so,
from here?
Like the rest of the group, I think the first thing we're all doing is returning to Thrall and figuring out what's going on with the commission. I mean, Jaxxers was the specific one, but I think Thravik would actually be wondering if there's like a bigger problem or something, because it's kind of strange that this happened. It could have just been us bringing the orb back. Well, actually, wait, hold on a second. We were the ones that brought the orb, weren't we?
Well,
I don't know if we asked that per se.
If it had been handled by you guys, and it said that it was handled by a dwarf and an elf, but it wasn't you.
But it wasn't them. Oh, yeah. Okay. That was only for like three days or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was only a few days.
So you could have handled it before.
So we don't know yet, and Rob will probably tell us later in a later section. But either way, like, we don't really know what's going on, and Jaxtrus obviously sent us there. So like that all doesn't add up, and I think he would be inquisitive, but be okay with like the pants burning. He would be on board with that. But obviously that's first in our future. I think after that, I agree that he'll like continue to travel and be, you know, weapon buddies with Saliak, and he'd like to try to learn more and reconnect with this friend that they forgot, Scarlath. I think he actually kind of like jived with Mixie a lot, probably because I'm married to the player, but I mean, I think he would like try to at the very least set her up as like some kind of contact for like when they're in town or trying to like research stuff. Like he would make sure that they kept, maybe not correspondence per se, but that they kept in touch because they had similar interests and they might be able to help each other in the future.
Mixie would be
so,
down for that.
Yeah. Not, and she'd be welcome to travel with
us
if she wanted to.
Nerds.
Yeah. Like he would like welcome anyone to travel with him, but
if she gets bored with the pirates, she'll join you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One other thing I thought of that possibly would be that, just in general, Saliak would continue to study the sword, possibly find, like, if he hears of it.
Actually, I need to amend mine, too. Sally, or Thravak, is definitely going to learn more about this Butterblade and figure out exactly what its deal is. You know, he already bonded a thread to it, but he wants to expand that.
Nice. Let's go with Susanna. What do you want to happen next?
Other than beating Jaxtrus' ass?
Yeah.
I want to find a new thing to study. I want to find like some really cool archaeological find, you know, that isn't covered in flesh.
Yeah.
Preferably. Do some care delving, but
preferably, but not a requirement.
Oh. Hannah, what do you want to happen next?
I think Quinamea and her freshly pardoned crew are going to take advantage of the fact that they've all been pardoned, or at least were promised to be, so that better happen. So making sure that happens. And then probably going places that they haven't been able to go recently because they are wanted criminals. So taking advantage of the fact that they've been pardoned.
And Wesley, what do you want to have happen next?
I could easily see during the travels, I could see Saliak kind of taking an interest if they were to hear of any, you know, any other elfish settlements, because, you know, I don't think he's met that many other elves. He'd want to learn more about it, but also just in order to sharpen his sword skills, if there was any sort of like a tournament or a festival, you know, if he hears like in the next town there's a fighting festival with prize money or something, then he would be like, oh come on, he'd be, you know, if Thravek's there, he'd be like, oh come on, it's a party, let's, you know, let's eat, drink, and fight people, you know, so. So, yeah, he's all about, of course, he is all about gathering the tales and sharpening his sword expertise. So in a place like that, he could do both.
Very nice. And Andrew, what do you want to have happen next?
So I think that Thravik's going to be very easy to please. He just wants to continue to search and find more ancient relics and history. So he just wants to adventure more, and that's going to be pretty easy to do with his little band that he's got, that he's a part of. So yeah, that's pretty much it for him. He just wants to find more.
Okay. So let's talk about some things that didn't happen. I remember early on thinking maybe rather than just things that didn't happen, things that happened I didn't expect, which was...
That's usually in this part too.
Yeah, the... you figuring out so kind of so quickly, I guess, about Saliak and Thravik's tie to this specific place. Certainly, I had thought that you might check astral space to see if they were connected in the marble and all that, and it would be a mystery. So that I expected. I didn't necessarily expect the amount of banter that ended up happening between Gent and Saliak. That was really fun.
Yeah.
And, I can't think of anything overt that I'd be like, oh yeah, this didn't happen, and I totally planned for it. Because I try to plan kind of a sandbox, as it were. There's certain events that go off. There are certain places. I try not to prescribe what people would do or wouldn't do. Trying to think. I know there's a couple things, like I mentioned, that, you know, at the end, we didn't really get a chance to talk about, you know, why did Jaxrus and all that, you know, why did they send you there? And how much of that is the truth? And how much is the truth? And it is kind of a mix. If you want to know.
Yes, that was going to be one of my questions in our next
section. Yeah. So, I mean, it's an obvious question. Yeah. What actually happened behind the scenes there? It's kind of more like, Saliak and Thravik were sent with Skarlath previously. And, Thravik and Saliak came running back with it, with this marble. And at the time, they still kind of had their memories, but it was beginning to fade. It is a horror power. Involved in the mark they have that was actually kind of drawing their memories away. I had it kind of as something the horror liked to do once in a while as a trick. Horror powers, all kinds of different horrors have different powers, but this one does have one that allows for the removal of memories and things like that. And it liked to use that sometimes to torture people, because once, you know, someone had known they'd been tortured, you can't really re-torture them the same way again. So that was part of what it liked to do.
That is pretty horrible.
Yeah, that's pretty twisted.
Oh, yeah.
And Jaxrus did take some pity on what had happened and decided to kind of more or less set up a situation where you could have an opportunity to go rescue Skarlath, but she knew it wouldn't be bought easily with just a simple, here's a marble and this was your friend, go find her. Plus, they still had your original mission that wasn't really done. Yeah. So she thought, let's get some extra people, better hands involved in this and see what happens. Sends a backup, basically.
Okay.
And so there is a mix of honesty and deception in there.
Okay.
Going on.
Mixie would still want to beat Jaxrus's ass.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's always amusing, too. And, you know, it's a different vibe from other groups I've had, too. It's just really fun because other groups, some of them, they would probably just take it at face value and go, yeah, we need to go do this. And, oh, well, you know, they wouldn't necessarily get that mad about it or anything. So this was actually pretty fun to see. Yeah. Yeah. And I think there were times when, okay, so one thing I can remember that didn't happen was there was some pieces of hints and stuff that I had that if Mixie had really persisted more with the orb she got, had really dug into it a little more, bit more time with that, there was more for her to discover from that Windling who had recorded a lot of stuff. So let's see if there's, let's see if there's anything in my notes about that, like, if I could find it quickly or not.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was very cool. I can't believe we didn't think of that for our favorite parts, because that was actually cool moment, too.
There were so many moments, though.
There were a lot. There were,
yeah.
There were many moments.
Yep.
So I have the notes here that Cyrus did have some, I can't remember the ones he did talk about, the Windling Cyrus Sparklewing. Certainly the first thing I have is probably one you heard, because it was, this is my memory orb and I hope to see the end of the scourge, but if not, here's my record. He does talk about the marbles a little bit. Having studied some of them, a little bit about, some people who had gone missing, very specifically about the disappearance of their last sword master, disappearances of their nobility, and yeah, mostly stuff like that, that kind of that story that I had read at the end. It was bits and pieces of that time recorded into the memory crystal or memory orb in this case.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Do you have any questions for me, though, as a GM?
I got one.
Yeah.
So if I remember right from how it works in just the system in general, it's come up in the Name Givers podcast, horror marks. So I assume we had a horror mark and it's gone because we destroyed it?
Yeah, so how horror marks work as a kind of both mechanical and story thing, and this is one of the neat things with Urathon as a system, the story is interwoven with the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so horrors get this power called horror marks, and it's way to have kind of a hold over you in a sense, and it's different depending on which horror. All the horrors are different. Some of them, having a mark causes you to do things you wouldn't normally do. There are some that are pretty disgusting and some that are just, like, for example, there's one particular kind of horror called a worm skull that if you're marked by people who are highly corrupted by worm skulls will actually seek out worms to eat and seek out things that people just shouldn't be eating and start eating it randomly at various times.
No.
And basically, that's how they reveal themselves. There is, within the lore, this kind of urban legend that artistry becomes worse if you're marked. And so there is built into the culture this whole thing of everyone having an artisan skill and proving to each other they're not horror marked by carving a really nice, you know, wooden stick carving or doing a really nice painting or singing a really nice song. And if you're really bad at that, maybe you're tainted by the horrors. So it's built into the lore there. But yes, both Saliak and Thravek had that, and it's necessary for the horror to do certain extra powers it has, such as the, it had one called Corrupt Karma, I believe it didn't use, but it did use the Corrupt Compromise, which was something that if it asks you to do something and you do it, it will give you karma to do it with, its own karma.
Oh, so if I had actually decided to let it out of the, that brings up my next question. I asked one, but what would have happened if I had let it out of the cage?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not even sure that I had really thought about it, as I tend to improvise a lot of things like that. But I believe that it probably would have then, you know, detached itself and basically jutted out of there because it would like to be out in the world. My decision behind the character was that it really had... it run out of resources. All the people were gone. The Scourge had gone on longer than it had expected, and it didn't. And I guess you may or may not have clued together the story that Jaxrus gave of the history of this care. That previously it had adventurers come in, clean the place out, and then there was people living in there, and then they weren't there anymore, and then there was more people living in there, and for some reason, people kept coming back.
Yeah, but it kept getting destroyed, for lack of a better word. It kept cleaning out.
Looted. Yeah, so it had been setting up situations to attract more people there, whether it was like, hey, look at all these things you can get out of the care, and then, you know, it had been looted. So, hey, this is a respite from the war. Hey, this is somewhere where you can study the horrors, you know, you can study the Scourge, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
And it had been, you know, setting up these cave-ins and things like that that looked like they were fresh cave-ins so that adventurers would go down and
get lured in. That. Yeah.
Yep.
I kind of got the idea that it was bored.
Yeah, it was getting that way, yeah. It had come to the realm and just, you know, it had always had interesting things to do, and it's running out of people. So it's like, and it's trapped in this cage, which doesn't help. It had been trapped for a long time, but saw an opportunity with the blades because those are things that it had discovered had been there the whole time. And it just didn't really know much about them until, you know, later on. And then it was like, hey, these things can get me out. So maybe I need to get some adventurers who are looking for, you know, weapons and things like that and try to convince them.
Cool.
Very cool.
Get some hold
Again,
over them.
Again, very well thought out.
Thanks. So, Hannah, you have any questions for me?
I think you answered them. My main questions were going to be about what was actually going on with, like, the commission and why were they being, like, shady. But you kind of answered that it was just, like, trying to get them to give them a second chance without revealing everything. So, yeah, that was my main question. I don't think I have any other questions.
Okay. And Susanna, did you have any questions?
Yeah, no. That's pretty much my question.
And Wesley?
The only one that really came to mind for me was that the character for Gent, I know you'd mentioned that there was that you wanted to have a second swordmaster to make things interesting, but as far as like personality and, you know, flaunting self-importance and all this, had you figured that out beforehand, or it was just like,
yeah, okay. I decided to go with a complete stereotypical swordmaster, because that's, you know, in the lore there are disciplines, and there are lots of takes on the disciplines you can do, and there's lots of, you know, Orthon has a lot of published books over the years that have a lot of different versions of it, but there's always the stereotypical caricature of swordmasters being over the top, self, you know, aggrandizing, etc. And I thought, you know, it'd be fun to show off the system by showing that kind of stereotype right there.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, very good.
It's just
idea.
Kind of fun.
Very fun.
And I was open to the possibility he would do something so aggrandizing and dumb that he ended up dying from it. On the airship, especially, but that didn't end up happening. So.
Yeah. That would have been funny if, like, he was, like, set up as this guy who thought he was so good to come along with us and, like, died before we even get to the place. Yeah. Like, that would have been funny.
That would have been really funny, though.
Oh, poor guy.
Part of me kind of likes that he survived, though.
I like that he survived, too, because he's just going to go tell this story that's complete BS.
You're right.
Yeah.
Let's be honest, he's going to somehow make himself into the hero, even though he spent most of the time either as a horror zombie or being knocked on his ass, butt. Or both.
I think that will be my answer to what I think happens next. That's totally what he would do.
Yeah.
The difference between the two of them, if I had to say it in a nutshell, is that my character is all about the understated efficiency approach. He lets the action say it without going on. Versus Gent is like, 24/7, 365, I must talk myself up all the time. You know, that's the difference, I think.
Well, he does have a little bit of that edge to him.
Yes, but he doesn't talk about it nearly as much.
I think also with, like, you got two examples of swordmasters there, and I know, Andrew, you've listened to some of the Name Givers ones, so you've got a third example of a swordmaster, one that's very different than both of these.
Yeah, very different.
I believe.
Yeah.
So where it's someone who uses spears instead of swords.
That's neat.
And
calls herself a spear dancer and is more about the dance.
Yep.
And about that kind of tradition. So there are a lot of ways you can take these disciplines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What kind of fan art would you all like to see?
Not
I know which I know fan art you
flesh.
Don't want to see.
I know the art I don't want to see.
But it's the final boss fight.
No. Yes, but it's still terrifying. Don't do that.
I think we actually said I want someone to draw this, but not show it to us.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, that's what Andrew said.
I think we said that in like episode 8 or something.
Andrew said it. Andrew said that. And I do want to see the duel on the deck of the ship.
Yeah,
obviously.
I was
going
to say that would be cool. And maybe the first, like, the pirate fight when we had the pirates go. That was cool.
Maybe us in the bar meeting and looking at the orb, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or, like, Mixie just, like, holding this orb in front of her face that it's, like, huge. Just
yeah.
Like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because to Mixie it was, like, an orb, and everyone else it was a marble.
Yeah, right.
Yep. It was really fun, I have to say, like, playing a character that's so much smaller than everyone else. It's just funny thinking through, like, the different ways in which that would be, you know, different. Like, I think in, like, the first episode I was talking about, like, are there windling sized doors, you know? Like,
I love that we invented that to the world.
Yeah. That's great.
I would like to see fan art of, like, an action shot of, like, the very last scene where Thravek is just bringing down the Butterblade onto the marble. Like, that would be a really cool fan art.
That'd be cool, yeah.
Okay, so I know I just remembered something I can say about something that didn't happen.
Okay.
This was actually something that did happen and didn't happen that was actually kind of interesting to me, and this was just in the very last session.
Ooh.
So I actually, in my mind, hadn't really connected this idea of you using the Butterblade to get rid of the marble.
Uh-huh.
I just thought this marble would just be a problem that you were going to have to, like, figure out what we were going to do with this in long term. Are you going to? So there's a bunch of options. You were like, maybe some of you might interpret that as, oh, now it's like a neat magic item because we killed this thing and make it into a weapon or whatever.
And then we realize it's actually still there. Yeah.
Or it may still be, there. Or someone might be like, yeah, it's still in there and let's go fly to the Death Sea and drop it into the Death Sea, which is a sea of lava, by the way.
Yeah.
You know, kind of the cast into Mount Doom kind of
thing. Yeah, that would have been cool.
So there was all kinds of options like that. But then when you said take the Butterblade and split it, it was like, yeah, I can't argue with that. Yeah. That actually makes sense.
Yeah, cool.
And what was going on with Saliak was that it had this kind of final move it could do if it was seeing itself as at risk of dying, and that was it would have to remove all the horror marks it had and make one final horror mark to someone that it's got entangled and then turn itself into a marble. And then basically the rule behind it was that basically the trade-off is it would be trapped in that marble until that person died or someone somehow summoned it out of there. So it would have a tie to their life and it could probably draw from that. But until they died, it would be trapped in that realm as a marble.
So it's like a desperation move, basically.
A desperation move, yeah.
Gotcha. So it actually, it wasn't dead from my axe blow. It was like...
Not yet, but it was getting there.
Yeah, hitting the
mark. Definitely getting closer than I thought you would get. So it was like, oh my, that 39 was like, whoa, you might actually kill it. Yeah.
Nice.
I'll just smack it one more time and it's good to go.
If I would have actually not rolled like butt on that like step 16 damage, he might have killed it with the 39. Man.
Yeah.
Those rolls that horror was making, though, I was like, oh my God, am I going to TPK?
I was very worried.
I was like, that's a possibility now.
I got low.
It was rolling scarily well.
I was almost unconscious. I can't say the word at one point.
Anyways, back to the original question. Anybody else got any other fan art they wanted to see?
I would love to see Mixie fire blasting the floor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Did that do anything, by the way?
And Mixie with the orb would be kind of fun, too. Like that actual orb you found with the memory.
The Wind Link. Yep. Did that do anything, that me fire blasting the floor?
It did, yeah. Okay. I mean, it was considered as kind of damage. There were probably too many pores around for you to stop that whole thing, but that's the kind of the idea of the pores and things was like, and I'm getting a little bit into the Earthdawn as a system here is one. I don't say it's a problem with the system, but one way you have to manage the system as a GM is you can't just have one big boss and that's it in something, because when you got multiple people and just one target, it's pretty obvious what's going to happen. Either you're going to overpower it and everyone's going to die, or they're just going to wipe the floor with it. So you kind of have to have little other things happening at the same time.
I've actually found the same thing with Dungeon World as well. I found that I really kind of need multiple enemies, because even if I put them up against something that's really big and really strong, my players will just destroy it.
Yeah. So it's part of the thinking of it, also just to give some flavor of what it was doing to everyone and in the past, and that there were actually some people you could rescue, you would discover through that.
Yeah, I like that.
And that's another thing we didn't get into depth to, but there were some people who were actually from the care still alive.
Oh, wow.
In that thing, because time was compressed for them a fair bit. They wouldn't have died of natural causes. It's just they would have eventually died of being drained of their energy.
Yeah. Cool. He must have been just like eating them one by one, because like if there were people like that, there were other people who were dead. So,
And that's why I had the rule of like when a marble rolled out, that roll a d6 and basically the lowest rolls were basically poofs of dust would come out, because it's basically all that was left of them was dust. And the higher up it was, the more life there was to them.
That's cool. So,
I caught on to that the more that you rolled that.
I did not. Very neat mechanic too, to kind of have some randomness in there, but also kind of reveal that. You know, because like the marbles the whole time were like this guy's special, this horror special magic that it was doing. So,
I really like the marbles.
Yeah.
And where that kind of came from was I had kind of designed a generic type of horror, and then I made a very specific one off that. So I've actually done a couple other stories involving this type of horror, but not this manifestation at all. They're actually quite different, the others I've done.
Very
but,
cool.
Yeah. The one other one that came to mind for art was that not so much the room around it, I could go without that, but just like a front shot of the cage and yeah. then what this amalgamation looked like it's pieces
Please
of
draw
other,
us your nightmares. Like,
yeah, well, exactly.
I mean, does it have wings? Does it have?
It
kind of
reminds
what pieces are all
of the thing that we fought in Shadowrun.
Yeah,
yeah.
Andrew's amalgamation mm-hmm. thing,
which is kind of cool considering
the troll
you know, project the parallels there, between
probably.
The two
yeah.
universes.
The parallels in the, yeah, exactly.
It reminds me of the big fleshy monster things from the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's called, Susanna? That
yeah, I know. Yeah, I think it is the forest. Yeah, the video game.
It's a video game. Yeah,
I haven't played it. I think I've seen video of it though, but
I've
I don't
seen
know
some
what
Let's Plays
are.
Of it. It's like you're trapped on this island.
Yes.
And there's these weird people.
There are really scary, horrible monster things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what did you think of the system?
Oh, I thought it was
a system.
I love
it. It's confusing, but as long as you have like a roller, I thought it was pretty easy.
Yeah.
I mean, it made sense to me because I really like the fact that like the step is the average roll of the dice you roll.
Yeah.
Like that really works. But like, you know, like we were saying, like the only way you're going to know your dice is if you have it in front of you or a really good roller like we did. So that really helped mm-hmm. simplify it. The system made a lot more sense as we went on. Like I remember being a little confused at the beginning, but Rob, like the whole way through, even from the very beginning, like you always made things really clear for us and helped, you know, keep us moving because we didn't know it as well. And I feel like I got the hang of things very well by the end. Like I kind of had it in my head finally, like when we can and can't use karma and, you know, how the different, you know, like, hey, you get +2 to attack. Oh, that means like +2 steps to attack. You know, that kind of stuff really started clicking by the end. And I just like the system a lot in general. Like, I think it's a really cool, different way to do it. Like, it's fun getting to have exploding dice and roll all the different dice. Like, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool because, like, every roll is a mystery. Are you going to roll terribly? It's a possibility. But you could roll way, way better
really,
than you should
really,
be able to.
Really
or
well.
If
that's
you're
awesome.
Wesley, you're going to roll really, really well every single time.
Yeah. Not sure. I recall there was an 8. There was an 8 at one point.
That's 8. Oh my.
I'm sure he rolled 1 at some point.
Oh
my God. And yeah, I mean, another thing that like this kind of goes into when I was designing the encounter. What was funny was just a funny side note. When I first did a first draft of just basic idea, I had this idea of just starting with a scene of this is so funny in retrospect. This was before I listened to Planes of Fate, by the way. I had this idea of a meteor crashing into the ground and revealing the lost care that no one knew about.
Oh my God.
And then I listened to Planes of Fate and went, oh.
Wow.
I had this idea I've never used in Earthdawn before. And then suddenly I was like, well, can't do that.
Yeah.
You could.
Well, I'm sorry
you
I beat
could
you to
have.
The punch.
You can totally
okay
do that.
That.
Yeah, you can totally do that.
But I just thought that was hilarious at the time.
That's
but
very funny.
A more
yeah.
typical like one shot with Earthdawn is often, especially when you got a new GM, like if you got a GM who hasn't done the system before, what I like about the game is it has built into the system and setting something for new players, which is you can do a care emergence. You can be coming out of the care, mm-hmm. or you can be trying to escape a care that has been overrun, that kind of thing. So you can start with characters who are new to the world and a GM who doesn't have to know the lore of the outside world at all, because they can carve their own niche on part of the map that doesn't have anything filled in on it yet. And
that's
so
cool.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
really cool.
Like
that's
that.
One of the fun things about it. And but you know, when designing this one, I thought, you know what, I've done that a few times. It'd be nice for something new. Something
yeah.
with a few slightly established characters. I know my stuff as a GM for this one, and I know that you guys can really handle some tough stuff, so I thought that would be really fun to just kind of throw you into the fray somewhat there.
It was nice to just get thrown in. I liked that.
Yeah.
Any other like questions or comments about the Earthdawn as a system?
I would play it again.
Yeah, I would definitely. The system. Absolutely. I really like exploding dice, as we already said. Exploding dice is awesome. Yep. Like, there have been so many moments in just this one shot that were made so much better by exploding dice. Like, it just made it so much more intense. Like, I really like that. It's fun.
I felt like Earthdawn, to me, kind of felt a lot like Savage Worlds, where like I got more, as I got more used to it, it became easier and easier to like play through it, and it felt really kind of crunchy up front. But once you get in, once you get used to it, like it's not that difficult, especially with a roller, you know. And they both had exploding dice, which is fun. I love exploding dice. I will explode dice all day.
I will say, if you get into like a campaign where you're doing it week to week, it becomes pretty easy. Like our regular sessions, combat takes half the amount of time it used to.
Like, and I'll also say it was easier to build my character in this system than it was to build it in Shadowrun by a mile.
Yes.
By so much.
Yes. And so character creation for this, they have a pretty good guide with it. It's really solid. And I know there was a little bit of extra complication because you all started at Circle 4, which I debated a little bit. But part of the reason I did that was like, realistically, in the story of the setting, you can't throw Circle 1 characters at horrors. That isn't a thing that happens.
And you wanted to show off a cool horror. So, I mean,
That's a good idea. I really like that. I think we were upgraded a little bit when we played Shadowrun as well.
I think we
were upgraded one in Westbrood as well. Yep. So I think it's a good way to like kind of throw your character in there, but be able to actually do cool stuff. Like, man, I would have been so bored playing a wizard at lower levels, quite honestly. Like, like, it's hard having only 4 spell slots.
Yeah.
I will say, I enjoyed playing the, what did I play in, when I played with?
A warrior, yeah.
I think I enjoyed playing the warrior more than I did the wizard, personally. I'm sure it would be more better as, I think it would be better as we got higher levels, but I immediately enjoyed playing the warrior more.
Yeah, it can take a lot to take on a spellcaster because there's a lot of utility to the spells that you have to get to know those spells, to know their utility. Mm-hmm. And there is
the flame one ended up being pretty useful.
Yeah, that worked really well. Yeah, exactly. And I'm just trying to think, like, there are, just so people know, there are 15 different disciplines you could choose. Obviously we've seen 4 of those kinds here and maybe 5, I guess, with the illusionist that was thrown in there a little bit as well. One of my favorites.
Oh, and the troubadour was thrown in too.
Yep. And the troubadour was in there too. I always love a troubadour. They're always great for role playing.
Fun to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is, one of my favorite characters in the, Legends of Earthdawn actual play podcast is the troubadour. Very over the top, very much, not a Gent Scamperly, but like, you know, getting in that kind of direction kind of thing.
Yeah.
So a little bit of influence there. I really enjoy all those. I've been playing obviously since about the 90s in high school. So I've gotten to know it over the years. I've seen all the additions and the changes, went over the various editions, and definitely 4th edition is definitely the best so far. Cause there's a lot of complications we didn't have to deal with in this.
Nice.
Things like some talents in the 1st edition didn't let you use karma, and you kind of had to know which ones do, which ones don't, which ones required karma. And you know, things like the success system wasn't there. It was actually a mathematical table the GM had to check.
That's actually something I was going to say. When we were talking earlier about the exploding dice and I get these huge rolls, I really liked the extra success system.
Yeah.
It's a really nice way to handle like getting those astronomical numbers.
It's a new thing
numbers.
For 4th edition.
Previous I think that's
edition,
really nice.
There was a table you had to check, and what it was this linear progression of mathematics that was like you had a table basically.
Yeah.
The new system is just like 5s.
Yeah.
You get 5 over the target, you get an extra success.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. You know? That's really nice. It's easy to calculate.
Nice and simple.
Yeah.
Very easy.
It's
to calculate.
For me, I don't think I would like love GMing Earthdawn, but I do really enjoy playing it. I don't like math.
Can be hard.
I do think it'd be easier to GM Earthdawn than it would be to GM Shadowrun.
Yeah.
Could be. Oh, yeah, I would agree, actually. Considering I'm I've been mulling the idea of running a one-shot Shadowrun. I have been like just nixing the idea of using Sixth World. I'm like, I'm using Anarchy. I'm using Anarchy. Yeah. That's it. The simple
one. We played. I'll tell you later. But I have a question for you, Rob.
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing about this system?
Ooh, so much. I think the setting and lore is very powerful. Mm-hmm. I think that's where I like that intertwining of the system and the setting, that it doesn't feel too disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like it's all there is. It's not simulationist in the sense of like, there's an explanation for everything, but there is a connection between the two. So you can come up with creative ways to deal with problems in the system. The only thing I've found lacking in it is that there is no real mixed success part of the system.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I really love in like something like Monster of the Week, of course. I really love that you get it, but something else terrible happens. Like there isn't anything in the system for that specifically. So sometimes I do, as a GM, somewhat hack that in. Sometimes I'll say, oh, now that failure rolled, maybe it's a success, but actually something terrible happens. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I like doing things like that with things that aren't combat, really. Like perceptions. They had a difficulty number of 7. They got a 6. So you know what? They got what they were looking for, but they also found something they didn't really want to know.
Or like me cracking the marble at the end. You know, I did it, but it took some time. So
Yeah.
But the player has to do something to describe how they're going to get around something. You know, I like those kinds of things. And I just love the how they're intertwined and how you can feel like you progress over time with the circles. I actually really enjoy the fact that it's not like D&D where there's levels that don't mean anything in the universe necessarily, and that the class doesn't mean anything in the universe. They always got to come up with something of how are you like a bard class. You know, that's not something characters should talk about amongst each other. But Earthdawn has that baked right in. Said, you are a sword master.
Yeah, really
that is
like
a
that.
Discipline.
Yeah, I really like that too. Yeah.
And that has a magical manifestation in the world. You are tied to all these other sword masters in the world. And you have access to their magic because you have been inducted into it and all that.
Yeah.
And there's actually even subsystems within the system that say, if you as a character stopped acting like your discipline, you actually can start having narrative trouble.
Oh, wow.
Using your talents.
That's cool.
That's really cool.
Things
can
like
you like multi-class in any way?
Yeah. So that's something that's been a bit of a hot potato over the years. It kind of got tacked on in the early edition and got refined a bit more later on. So maybe this is a little bit of what could come next for your characters, for example. Yes, you can multi-discipline. You just have to come up with a narrative way to resolve any differences between them. Like if you are a Swordmaster Troubadour, for example, is a very easily paired multi-discipline thing where you can easily narratively come up with the idea of Swordmaster who loves to tell tales and sing and spread joy to the world and that kind of thing. But a Swordmaster Nethermancer might be a harder thing to explain, you know?
Yeah.
Involving spirits and the dark, you could do it, but you got to twist things, you know?
Yeah.
But beyond that, there's a new thing that was added in fourth edition, and that is the path system, which is really fascinating. It was their way of resolving all these weird extra disciplines that were added in extra books and earlier editions. There were things like racial disciplines like orcs had the liberators because they got this history of being enslaved. Obsidian had the Brothers of Stone, or I think it was actually the Purifiers at the time. They've added this those instead of as disciplines as these other things called paths. So at Fifth Circle, you could join a path as, you know, I would relate it to kind of like being a specialization.
Cool.
Our characters and our AP got into that in the second season of the podcast. So I won't go too much in depth, but it's a really clever system that adds to it without it feeling power gamey in any way, but very narrative. Makes a lot more narrative sense than just trying to go after several disciplines kind of thing. So
awesome.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other questions about the system or setting, that kind of stuff?
I mean, I kind of hope we can, well, even if it's not in this system, I'm going to save this character because I really like him. I might put him somewhere else and see what happens.
Maybe someday, you know, it could be a thing where, you know, we get this back together and maybe you can raise your circle up
Yeah.
Maybe even choose a path or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But, that could be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'll throw it there as well. As you mentioned Shadowrun and how they have a shared universe. So the little bit of history with that is that Shadowrun was made first.
Mm-hmm.
By FASA, and then Earthdawn was made as kind of like, hey, they say Shadowrun's in the sixth world. What was the fourth world? Because we know the fifth world was before the great the ghost dance and all that, and the awakening and so on. So that's what Earthdawn was like the answer to this. What was the fourth world? Although they never like overtly said it in any of the lore. It was hinted everywhere, and there's some characters that are shared between them.
Mm.
I mean, Dunkelzahn's will mentions Alakia, which is queen of the blood elves in Earthdawn, and having known her for so long
that's really cool.
Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
That's all there. The dragons that exist in Earthdawn, a lot of them are still alive in Shadowrun. They just took different names.
Yeah.
So, for example, Dunkelzahn was Mountain Shadow, those kinds of things. But when they sold off the IP and when they decided, you know, to make fourth edition Earthdawn, they also made another system because they no longer own Shadowrun. So they made another system based on the Earthdawn system rather than the, you know, D6 everywhere Shadowrun system.
Yeah.
So to you're give saying Earthdawn that a future. There's another system that's like Shadowrun.
Sort of.
There is, sort of. It is called 1879.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And it is a alternative history kind of, what if the awakening happening in it happened in the Victoria era.
So it's more steampunk than cyberpunk.
Yes.
So steam weird is one of the terms I hear thrown around before it because it's like the weird part being because of the magic.
Yeah, I like
involved.
That.
And so like
industrial age. Yeah.
A little bit of a pitch here for anyone looking to listen to other things as well. We have also a shorter podcast called Boneyards and Boojums, which is our 1879 one, which is much shorter, tighter. So if you're looking for something that's just like not going to be a long sprawling campaign, but some short arcs and things like that, check that out. And some of the opening work, and then hopefully we'll have you guys on sometimes as characters. We like to do guest characters on it a lot. So every time we do an arc, we usually have a guest.
Yes.
We've had a lot of people over the time, but maybe someday we can all together do an 1879 run though too. So I invite you to maybe do that as a one shot someday, a few years from now, whenever you get through your list of things to do.
Yeah, we have a lot of stuff.
We have a lot.
It's a long list. Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about that you do before we go?
Oh, no, just check out, I guess, the Name Givers podcast or Boneyards and Boojums. That's another one. And
are those on separate feeds?
They're on separate feeds, So we do have some of the Boneyards and Boojums listed as bonuses on the Name Givers one because initially it was just a Halloween special.
I heard
kind
the first
thing.
One of those. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, so that's actually ended up being our first arc for the actual thing because we did it as like, let's try out the system and see what it's like and really enjoyed it. So we're like, this is going to be our off, you know, campaign just like once in a while.
Nice.
So did a lot of fun with that.
Very cool.
It's, I would say, probably more narrative than our Earthdawn one. Earthdawn one is a little more crunch. Not that there's no narrative. There's tons of it. It's just there's a lot more combat in the your classical fantasy kind of thing in the Name Givers one.
Awesome.
Very cool.
Well, thank you so much for coming on here. We have had a blast.
Yeah,
you were an awesome GM.
Yes.
We really, really enjoyed this. And we will definitely have
it
you
was
back
fun.
Eventually.
It was really fun.
I don't know when eventually is going to be, but
to be determined
eventually.
On the date.
To be continued someday.
Yeah.
So with that, we will leave all of our lovely listeners, and we will have something new and something special coming out next week. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
I waved. I don't know why I waved.
Oh boy.